Thanks, Nathan. Welcome back to Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Next, another installment in our Talking with the Candidates series. Joshua Harris is the Green Party's nominee for mayor of Baltimore. He will face Democratic Senator Catherine Pugh and Republican candidate Alan Walden in the November 8th election. Mr. Harris is 30 years old. He lives in the Hollins Market area of southwest Baltimore. He's a community activist and the co-founder of Hollins Creative Placemaking. In addition, he's the managing editor of The Sphinx, the magazine of Alpha Phi Alpha, the African-American national fraternity that's based here in Baltimore. He's also a former legislative aide for Delegate Charles Snyder, or Sidner, rather, excuse me, who represents parts of Baltimore County. A Chicago native and a graduate of Augsburg College in Minneapolis, Mr. Harris moved to Baltimore in 2012. This week, he was named Best Politician in the City Paper's annual Best of Baltimore issue, and he joins me in the studio. It's good to see you, sir. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
So as the best politician, according to the senior to the City Paper, is that an encomium? Is that a slander? I mean, this is the year of the outsider. Is that a good thing?
I guess so. It was actually determined by readers. So readers, they took a poll for readers, and they voted. I didn't quite think I was there yet, but I guess I'm officially a politician.
There you go. Congratulations or condolences, whatever. You began in this race several months ago, many months ago. As a Democrat, you decided to switch to the Green Party. Explain how that happened.
Well, I was always considering running as an independent, and I knew of the Green Party. A friend and mentor of mine, Rosa Clemente, who's an activist, ran on the vice presidential ticket for the Green Party in 2008. I just wasn't familiar with the Green Party locally, and I found out that I actually was. And I found out that many of the people involved in the Green Party locally have been very active on the ground in social justice movement. And so for me, the Green Party is a party that has been very outspoken and vocal about issues of social justice, racial justice, economic justice, and environmental justice, all values that are near and dear to my heart. And I've also understand I'm a student of history. And so understanding the history of Baltimore City, while we're a Democratic title in town, in nature, the policies that have been implemented have really been Republican. Understanding our propensity to favor major corporations at the expense of schools, neighborhood, and people, that's what we traditionally see under Republican administrations. And so I think that Baltimore needs a change and needs leadership that's unafraid to go against the grain and do what may not be the popular thing to do, but stand for what's right and stand for people over corporate interests.
You stood for people. As a matter of fact, you lied down for people on Tuesday night, just this week. You and, as a matter of fact, Jill Stein, the president, presidential candidate for the Green Party, and her vice presidential candidate have supported you as well. Dr. Margaret Flowers, who's going to be on Midday with me in a few weeks, who's the senatorial candidate for the Green Party. You slept on the streets of Baltimore on Tuesday night. Tell us how that went.
Well, yes, it was. We really wanted to bring awareness to the issue of homelessness and poverty in Baltimore City. We hear about it and we know that it exists. But all too often, as we drive past so many homeless people on the streets of Baltimore every day, we become disconnected and we sometimes fail to realize that these are human beings. They're people who have stories, who have lives, and they've ended up in this situation due to failed circumstances. And you never know, there's no cookie cutter approach as to why an individual becomes homeless. And so we wanted to really bring awareness to the issue and some faces to humanize the issue of homelessness in Baltimore City.
What did you learn personally about it that you think you didn't know on Monday night?
I think one of the biggest things that I learned and one of the things that we saw there is that we had a bail enforcement agent who came down and just started snatching people's tents open in the middle of the night, and they were looking for someone. And they knew they were in the wrong because as soon as we came over, they left. And that just because someone's homeless doesn't mean that they don't have rights, doesn't mean that they should be dehumanized or disrespected. And so I also spent a lot of time talking to individuals and finding out their stories as to how they ended up. There's even one young man who came back who was homeless in 2012 with his daughter down there. And he comes back now to talk to his friends and to bring whatever resources he can now that he's employed and off the street. And so just listening to people was an eye-opening experience and really reiterated the need for more advocacy on the issue of homelessness in Baltimore City.
On 88.1, I'm Tom Hall. My guest this morning, Joshua Harris. He's the Green Party candidate for mayor in the city of Baltimore. Can you describe your personal philosophy of governing? I mean, is it completely in sync with the philosophy as people understand it of the Green Party? Do you find any places in which you diverge from the national ticket, for example, or the Green Party philosophy in general?
I think that my focus in looking at on the local level specifically, it's about uniting a divided city, making sure that Baltimore works for all of us. All of our children deserve equal access and opportunity to be successful. And that's something that we haven't seen. Whether you're talking about right now, we're giving Port Covington $660 million while we have schools where our kids can't drink water and they don't have heat. But really making sure that the way that we govern is effective in the business of policy and how it impacts our constituents, rather than just being so quick to favor those corporate entities over the citizens of Baltimore. And that's something that I don't think that we've seen in quite some time in Baltimore City, someone who's willing to put people first. So that's really what my philosophy is, putting people, because it's the people that make Baltimore City great. It's the people who have been working to sustain and build Baltimore for years, and they deserve to be invested in.
Bishop Miles and I were just talking about the Port Covington Agreement. He's been an activist in this town for a long, long time. He's very much in favor of this agreement because, in this case, floating these bonds for this major corporation, Under Armour, is going to create a lot of jobs. It's going to make housing available to people who might not otherwise have it available. So they would argue that there is a direct impact on people's lives by working with and partnering with corporations like Under Armour. How do you see the Port Covington deal in particular? What would be different about it if you were the mayor right now?
Absolutely. I think that it's commendable the work that Bill did to really push to try to get something for the city out of this deal. And we can get into the weeds and the details of the community benefits agreement. But really what we've seen in Baltimore City, we've seen what they call public-private partnership, where we publicize the debt and we privatize the profit. And I don't think that that's a true sustainable model for development of a city. We have to look at this deal much larger than just a microcosm of right now in Port Covington, understanding that we're going to lose at least $50 million a year in school funding. We can't afford that. That's something that they decided to make this decision before the legislature had the ability to reformat this school funding formula.
But they have confidence that the legislature will revise the formula and that that problem can be fixed. That's a problem that a lot of people have identified, certainly.
And then why sign the contract before that's done? You can have confidence that you want, but there's no guarantees there. There's also understanding a regional sustainability model, understanding the opportunity collaborative and the work that's been done there. Where does Port Covington fit in with that plan and that vision for how we should build the city regionally? Making sure or understanding that if we're going to give a TIF this large, why not just expand the TIF to include Westport and Cherry Hill rather than giving the money to the developer and then letting the developer decide what they're willing to give the community? That's what true community partnerships look like. But instead, what we've seen is that we have more faith in businesses because they have all the right answers, and we trust them more than anything, more than we do the community in particular. So we're just going to let them give the community whatever they decide, rather than truly partnering with the community to make this a comprehensive community development vision for the city as a whole. And that's not what we've seen with Port Covington. And I can go into the details and the weeds, but that would take quite some time.
Sure.
Someone who's read 367 pages of the application. There's many things that could be done differently.
And you're no stranger to TIFs. You actually worked on one. You were part of a community group involved in a TIF involving University of Maryland Biopark on the west side. What about the characterization of this deal? It says this really is precedent setting. This is a very different kind of TIF than happened with the Biopark or that happened with the Hilton Hotel that happened with Harbor East. This is a very different universe, given that the developer is, you know, in it for about $139 million right up front.
Yeah, but we're talking about a billionaire developer who's in it. So when you compare that in the greater scheme, yes, it's precedented because it's one of the largest in the country. So, of course, anything that's done, even a community benefits agreement. And so knowing that this has been done before and we've seen this, whether you talk about the University of Maryland Biopark 14 years ago when they first were given a sunny day loan from the state under the auspices that they would create thousands of jobs to impact the Poe Homes community and give jobs and employment for those areas in poverty over there, which we have not seen 14 years later. And now they're being given $17.5 million. So people had faith then, and there were people who came to the table and said, we believe that they're gonna do this and make this right, and we haven't seen it yet. And so we really need to make sure that we're putting accountability metrics into these deals and more of an inclusive approach to how we develop. There's cities that have done this, whether you talk about Charlotte, who's really not only improved in increasing business development, but also community relations and minimizing poverty in the city. You have Grand Rapids, Michigan that has done this. And so So they're more on the lines with true community-based development models that we can look to for how we not only improve the city and develop our downtown, but develop uptown and really raise the median family household income. Because until we begin to do that, we're only displacing problems rather than creating solutions to the problem.
Joshua Harris is the Green Party candidate for mayor of the city of Baltimore. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall on 88.1 WYPR. Mr. Harris, the Department of Justice issued a few weeks ago a scathing report about the Baltimore City Police Department. A consent decree is going to be developed in the coming weeks between the DOJ and the city of Baltimore. What are the parameters or the dimensions of a consent decree you think should be part of that agreement?
Well, we actually have a press conference later on this afternoon about that, a community coalition called Stand Up Baltimore, a coalition for the transformation and betterment of Baltimore. And there's many things that we'd like to see in that, probably the largest being really accountability for individual officers that are found to be in violation or violating individuals' rights or found in the wrong. They have to be held accountable and understand that it's no longer the citizens that will foot the bill for their wrongdoings. Let me backpedal a little bit. For this report, it's even more disheartening and discouraging that people are acting shocked. As a young black man in Baltimore, understanding what I've had to deal with dealing with police in my own community, understanding this is a city that shells out millions of dollars a year in police brutality lawsuits for the elected leadership who was signing those checks to act as if they did not know this was going on or that this is a surprise and now they want to do something about it. That's even more problematic. You have people who fund, who sit on public safety committees and fund the police department knowing what has happened, and that's problematic. And that's what we need to change, because that leadership has allowed this to happen and has not said anything prior to this moment in this report coming out, despite reports and complaints from citizens of Baltimore. And that's really what we need to change, and why I believe Baltimore needs a fresh start and leadership that is truly committed to investing and working for the people of Baltimore.
But then would you not agree to compensate families who've been victims of police misconduct and brutality? I mean, if the citizens of Baltimore aren't going to pick up the tab for police misconduct, how do these families get justice and get compensated?
Oh, absolutely. No, as the agency has to be held accountable for those. However, I'm saying that the officers should also be held accountable and have their insurance benefits or their benefits lost or their pension lost to finance something to really hold them accountable and say that I have to think twice before I make this decision. That's what we have to really put in place. I'm not saying not pay out those who have been victims, but really making sure that officers understand that they will have to pay as well.
Mm-hmm. What can you do as the mayor that you think can really place your imprint and move the city forward? I mean, the particular office of mayor of the city of Baltimore, the particular authority that office has, what do you think as the mayor you'll be able to do to change the climate, as you say, to disrupt what's been going on previously and to change the direction and move the needle?
Absolutely. That's a great question. And so my platform is called Banking for Baltimore Undivided, and the staple of it is something that's called public banking. And so public banking is under the concept of understanding that right now our city's $2.7 billion operating budget is sitting in a bank on Wall Street. And then that bank on Wall Street leverages it to make investments and make its CEOs and its investors wealthy while the city sees no return on that. Then, in fact, like we're about to do for Port Covington, we go up to Wall Street and we take out a municipal bond. In this case, Port Covington, $660 million. In some cases in Baltimore, we're paying upwards of 15% interest on those bonds. The citizens end up footing that bill. If we were to simply remove our money from that Wall Street bank and open up our own Baltimore City Public Bank, we can leverage it and make the exact same investments that they do on Wall Street. But now every penny of interest earned comes back into the city, and we need to finance the changes to move forward our city. So this is how we're going to finance what needs to be done. And we can say that immediately we want 40% of all interest earned to go directly towards to start making sure that our children can drink the water in schools, that they have heat in the wintertime and air conditioning in the summertime. We can say we want another 20% to go directly towards infrastructure repairs and making sure that when you and I drive up and down the roads, we aren't having to replace tires and axles so frequently. We can say that we want another 20% to go towards workforce development, because what happens in Baltimore...
Are there precedents for this, or are there other cities doing this, or a public bank? So you're saying that right now, that rather than have investors, fund things, like, because these bonds are going to be purchased by investors. Mm-hmm. What makes you think that they would purchase bonds from a public bank any more easily than they'd purchase it from Wall Street.
Well, in Baltimore's case, with our budget, that's money that's guaranteed from income tax revenue and other revenue throughout the year, we could float our own bonds in many cases. Even if we just started with our $98 million rainy day fund, what we can do with leveraging that to make investments. And there's a precedent that's already been set at North Dakota, has a North Dakota public bank where they've avoided every stock market crash for the last 100 years because the bank isn't driven by profit. So they aren't so aggressive with their investments. Any interest earned is a benefit to the city. Or to the state in that case. They most recently were able to cut student loan interest rates in half for all students that had loans through the North Dakota Public Bank. Because again, the bank isn't driven by profit. So all interest is a benefit to the citizens. And so there's also models overseas that we can look to as an example. And it's really about understanding what Senator Sanders talked about on the national level and how Wall Street impacts our lives directly, whether we realize it or not.
Well, very quickly, just have about 30 seconds. I assume you support Dr. Stein for president of the Green Party. Ralph Nader drew about 2.7% of the vote when he ran against Al Gore and George Bush, and that election went to George Bush. What do you think about the folks who say that the Green Party could siphon off votes from Hillary Clinton and elect Donald Trump president?
I think that if that's their fear, they should get out and begin to register voters to make sure that that doesn't happen, because we have, I believe it's about, about 500 million people that don't vote consistently. So that's one of your friends, one of your family members that isn't voting. So make sure that they get out to the polls this November.
Not 500 million, but
there's a lot of people that don't vote. And vote for your conscience and vote for what you believe is right rather than what you're afraid of.
All right. Well, Joshua Harris, it's terrific to talk to you. Thank you so much for your time, and we will see you soon.
Thank you.
Joshua Harris is the Green Party nominee for mayor of Baltimore. He'll join Green Party presidential candidate Jill Stein and vice presidential candidate Ajamu Baraka at a fundraiser and Get Out the Vote rally tonight at 7 o'clock at the Downtown Cultural Arts Center in Baltimore. As I mentioned earlier in the show, beginning Monday, I'll be hosting Midday. We will, of course, cover the November 8th election up and down the ballot. Next month, we'll have a conversation on Midday with all three candidates for mayor of Baltimore, Senator Pugh, Alan Walden, and Mr. Harris. We look forward to that discussion. Also beginning Monday, Sheila Cast will begin her new show, On the Record, which you'll hear weekday mornings at 9:30 here on WIPR. I'm Tom Hall. Coming up later in this program, Mother's Lament, a new oratorio that addresses the epidemic of violence in the African-American community. We'll talk to the creative team behind the world premiere at Morgan State tomorrow night. That's coming up after a break for the news. First, it's time for a Baltimore story with Gil Sandler.